You're listening to a podcast hosted on the Podcast Matrix. Get your entire podcast library hosted now at whatisthepodcastmatrix.com.
When you hear the words Friday the 13th, what do you think of? Well, most will recollect a certain impossible-to-be-killed masked individual bearing sharp weapons of all kinds. There's another Friday the 13th that deserves attention. In 1987, Friday the 13th, the series, created a rich tapestry of completely original storytelling. Based on a series of curious, devilishly enchanted objects that must be recovered and returned to the vault to prevent truly dark fates from befalling their owners. This is the detailed revisit and review of the adventures of their reacquisition, episode by episode. You won't find any hockey masks here. This is the Curious Goods Podcast from Two Guys Talking Horror.
Few things solicit fear like the dentist's chair. While the common fear of the dentist isn't reasonable, what would be reasonable is if the dentist's chair were actually an electric chair. Now imagine that that electric chair could not only deliver electricity and kill, but sap the energy and body from one person and then transfer it to another. All that and more awaits us inside this week's hunt for an antique electric chair inside an episode full of shocking nostalgia. It's time for the Curious Goods Podcast, a retelling, a revisit, and a detailed educational review of each episode of Friday the 13th, the series. This time, Season 1, Episode 17,
The Electrocutioner.
Greetings, everybody. I'm Mike Wilkerson, one of your hosts.
And I'm Nicholas J. Hearn, your other host.
All kinds of opinion inside of this one for sure, but first, some quick housekeeping. Predator. Nick and I had a lively discussion of some other movie that had something like the word "the" in front of Predator.
Uh-huh.
And it made me think of a really great movie called Predator, which made me think of the perspective review of Predator that I want all of you to go check out right now over at twoguystalking.com/Predator, because it's so awesome. The Podcaster Matrix. Nick, it's always a good time to talk about the great promotional services available over at podcastermatrix.com. For those of you that have your own podcast, I got to tell you, you need to get over to podcastermatrix.com. For those of you looking for great hosting, great podcast promotional services, or looking to find the little bit of polish you can add to your podcast game to take it to the next level, check out podcastermatrix.com.
It's the easy button when it comes to podcasting.
Nick, enough housekeeping. Let's get straight to the retelling of this episode.
My favorite part.
It's always the great part. For this episode of Friday the 13th, Season 1, Episode 17,
The Electrocutioner.
A stormy night in a prison. An inmate is taken from his cell. His head is shaved. Then he is led to a chamber that features a small audience and a large wooden chair. As he's strapped into it, he professes, This is a mistake! A phone rings, and,
yes, I understand.
I'm sorry, your stay of execution has been denied.
Wah, wah, wah.
Innocence continues to be professed as midnight strikes, and the switch is thrown. Electricity engages his body as he gurgles and struggles, but he's not dead yet? Again the switch is thrown. Again more gurgling and convulsing. Another stethoscope check reveals he's finally gone. His body is taken from the room, but wait! He's still apparently alive!
You can't execute a man twice.
You can't. As such, he's led from the prison to an awaiting van to take him to a local, quote, research facility. Ryan and Mickey, back in their rooms above the Curious Goods Antique Shop, are talking about all things 80s nostalgia as Jack shows up and rains on their collective parade with a letter that couldn't be delivered to a Dr. Lindheim.
Return to sender, address unknown.
Bummer. That letter was about an electric chair. And our adventure launches. Inside Haverstock Reform School, where dentistry is being committed.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. A dentist is giving a teenager a nitrous shot, and an older agent arrives to congratulate Dr. Lindheim that it's time to close up shop soon. Unfortunately, the reform school is closing, and the doctor isn't at all pleased.
There's no job security anymore, Mike.
There is no job security, especially in electrified dentistry. Ryan and Jack arrive over at the prison to see where the chair used to be. The only person ever to survive the electric chair was a gentleman named Pittman. Later, it was discovered that Mr. Pittman was actually innocent, but was unfortunately shipped off to an institution. Back inside the dentist lab, where dentist Lindheim, a.k.a. Pittman, is sharing time with another wayward orphan who will soon have a very shocking experience of his own. Pittman engages the chair, which sucks the life and body from his victim, which is then transferred to Pittman. It's murder. Murder most foul.
It's shocking.
Now it's time to visit the former district attorney. Dr. Lindheim, a.k.a. Pittman, visits the district attorney to let him know that he was electrocuted under false pretenses. He reveals that he is actually Eli Pittman. The district attorney invites him to leave, and he does, right after shocking the district attorney to death through the shared doorknob that both of them are grasping. Shocking, to be sure.
It's electric, boogie woogie woogie.
That's awesome. Mickey and Ryan return back to the Curious Kid shop after a research visit to the local library and Xerox machine.
What are those, Mike?
Dear God, the local district attorney that prosecuted Pittman has been electrocuted and didn't survive.
Luckily, Jack was watching the news and saw this bit of information and connects the dots.
Speaking of dots, Pittman X's off yet another in the growing number of faces in a lineup of soon-to-die victims in a newspaper photo, and prepares a very special delivery for a certain judge. It's time for the same girl that visited Dr. Lindheim in the beginning of the episode to visit his office again. You know why, Nick? Because he's got an excuse for her from history class.
I think that's a lie.
Isn't that convenient? That's awesome. It's time for more funny gas in the special dentist chair. Meanwhile, back at the Curious Good shop, Jack, Mickey, and Ryan construct a game plan to take care of Lindheim. Lindheim now has the young lady strapped into his special dentistry chair again and continues to churn up the gas. She's very happy, and wow, he's such a nice guy. That is until he throws the switch and she too disappears into a white, hazy pile of empty clothing and bad special effects. It's time to reclaim more power, and he does via the chair. Snap pan to a certain judge's house, where Ryan and Mickey arrive early to see Pittman greeting the judge.
What would be the proper judicial punishment for a man who wrongly executed a young man? Pittman asks the judge.
Pittman grabs the railing that the judge and he are both holding onto at the time, and at the top of the stairs, there's electricity thrown. It's more shocking news for the judge, who is now dead. Ryan and Mickey witness murder, murder most foul again. They both run to the rolls for cover, but damn, the keys fell during their escape attempt, and now Pittman is going to shock them to death inside the car. Pittman delivers a long load of electricity to the rolls, but our heroes survive.
The rubber tires ground them, Mike.
That's a very grounded comment, Nick. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. They quickly return back to the Curious Good shop and make a new game plan to visit Dr. Lindheim at the reform school right down the street. Jack and Mickey arrive in specialized rubber boots to insulate them from future shocking developments. The principal of the reform school ushers them around the facility to look at cool old things and... Oh! There's a call for the principal to come to the dentist's office. Ryan arrives at the prison to find out who the last man in the photo lineup is. It's the jury foreman, says the warden, who, by the way, has a delicious meatloaf to share with Ryan and his wife at home tonight.
Why don't you come on over?
Okay.
And so the night is planned. Meanwhile, back at the dentist's office, Lindheim slash Pittman has incapacitated the principal with an impossible prickly hypodermic needle poke. It's time to extract information inside the dentist chair about the two visitors, the young lady and the old man who needed information. The principal and a dentist drill become very familiar with each other. Now that the information's been found and collected, it's time for the pain to end, via the electrical chair, that is. And yet, another set of clothes is made available. Time to suckle the power! As Pittman is being engorged with electricity, Jack and Mickey are outside putting on rubber gloves and enter into the office. Inside, they notice that the exit door is ajar.
He must have went out this way, Jack.
Inside, they discover the modified electrical chair and Mickey finds clothing. Not clothing she can wear because it's a man's clothing. Damn. Jack begins MacGyvering a compass out of trinkets and cork and whatever the hell else is on the table to find Pittman. Of course, because he now, engorged with power, has a particular electrical signature that will be tracked by the compass. Nick, that's amazing. I can't quite believe that happened.
For an ugly man, he's quite attractive. Puns, I've got them.
He and Mickey begin venturing through the very dark and mysterious reform school basement and find Pittman. It was the crackle of electrical energy that led them to Pittman, who walks away? Huh?
He has to save his electrical wad for his true target.
Right, right. Jack and Mickey lift up the very light chair into their vehicle and get it back to the Curious Goods shop, thereby making the item
recovered.
Ryan arrives back and shares the jury foreman information. The jury foreman is now dead, not from electrocution, but from cancer many years ago. Ooh, interesting. Not really. Jack is sure that Pittman has killed again. You know, the escaped reform children. They discern that the prison warden is probably the next victim. Time for meatloaf for everyone on screen. Pittman arrives at the warden's home. Hey, the phones are out, but let's not worry about that part right now. The warden's wife lets in a new house guest, and the warden recognizes Eli Pittman. Ryan and Mickey and Jack arrive at the front door and erect a set of jumper cables 7,000 feet from the front door to help defray the power of this fully operational homicidal maniac. Jack affixes the very long jumper cable set to Pittman's hand, and Pittman's last fried food is his last meal.
I don't think there would have been enough meatloaf for him anyway. To cap off the episode, back at the Curious Goods antique store, Jack is fiddling with one of Ryan's electrical doodads to make it more powerful, allowing Mickey to put her hands on it, with electrifying results. We're left with a freeze frame of Mickey with her hair all poofed out like she's just been shocked, with a giant smile on her face. Ha ha. Cut to black, roll credits.
We're always able to find something good inside each episode of Friday the 13th, the series. This one is no exception. Let's talk about the goods. Black and white, back and forth. I traditionally don't like things that snap to and fro in a timeline, not unlike the recent unfortunate Captain Marvel film. But inside this episode, they're able to take the current goings-on versus what was, in particular inside of memory of the bad guy, with black and white frame stuffs inside of this, and I thought it was very good.
I only half agree with you. I believe the front half, the very beginning, the first 4 minutes or so, that took place in the past with Pittman, you know, in prison and being led to the chair.
Mm-hmm.
I thought all that was great. Yep. That was a great way to start it. Okay, we are in the past. Great. Kind of harkens back to the episode where Mickey and Ryan traveled back in time with the Dracula cloak to 1800s England.
Mm-hmm.
And that chunk of the episode was in black and white while they were in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked that. But for me, later on in the episode, every time we do a flashback, every time Pittman remembers or half remembers what really happened, because we're going to assume being electrocuted twice and dying a little bit messed him up. Because he's not remembering it right. He's remembering people laughing at him, mm-hmm. and it's all very distorted. The problem is that those flashbacks just last just a little bit too long for me. I
think I'll join you with that. I don't disagree with you on
that. I would have rather had him a little bit shorter. I understand it was, you know, you're a television show. You're trying to pad for time, and I get that,
mm-hmm.
but I kind of wish it was a little bit less.
I agree with the padding for time thing. They could have definitely been less.
Mm.
I'm trying to think of what they would have fleshed it in with that wasn't already here. Production design. Nick and I always love it when television programs bother to go places to help foster along production design.
Go that extra mile.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The want to try and make something inside of a prison could be very, very hack.
Mm-hmm.
I.e., let's make what looks like some bars. Okay, you guys can all imagine, let's go get some wooden dowels down the street at the hardware store. Okay, that's going to suck.
Paint them gray.
Right. And that's not what they have here at all. There are obviously some places, a facility that they used, whether mm-hmm. it was in operation or not,
yeah.
who knows. But they were able to go to a facility, at least a couple of different facilities, to help pay off where they were inside of the episode. It's always yielded lots of mileage inside of an episode of Friday the 13th, and this one's no exception.
Right. It adds to the level of authenticity of your story.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this story is a little wonky, a little laughable, but it's still appreciated that they went the extra mile to go to these locations to make you believe a little bit more.
Yeah, there's a bunch of other stuff that we're going to lump into production design. Again, for those of you that aren't familiar with production design, it's essentially anything you can see on the screen is what a production designer is needing to provide for you to help the believability factors. And a couple other ones to definitely mention, shaving a dude bald.
Yeah.
This is a big deal, especially in a time of multi-million-dollar actors where I dare say many would never want to be shaved, in particular their eyebrows, because if things don't grow back right, they're not going to look the same.
True.
They're not going to have the same traits or characteristics that often make them very famous nowadays. Think of any star that you like at all and what their most definable trait is. And if you were to take that away, even temporarily, what would happen for that star? Now imagine that it never grew back. Sigourney Weaver is one of the probably on top of the heaps, where for her to shave her head was millions and millions of dollars, because what if it didn't grow back right, or what if it didn't grow back at all?
Well, I guess we all have to worry about that, but I think
I don't give me a couple million. I don't care if my hair shaves back or not.
Well, again, I understand what you're saying. The danger is there, mm-hmm. I guess. I don't know. I've shaved my head a couple of times, and my hair's always grown right back. So
mm-hmm.
I've never had to worry about that. And nowadays, it's not necessarily that big of a deal for a celebrity, for an actor, to change their physical appearance. Because it's becoming more commonplace for somebody to take that quote-unquote drastic step for a role.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's go back to the 80s, though, when this show was done. I would have to, again, I think it's one of the reasons why a lot of the stuff in the prison was shot in black and white. It's a lot easier to hide things if you're shooting in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
I did not see the lines where a bald cap could be, but we may have been tricked. It is a possibility that he didn't shave his head at all,
mm-hmm.
and that there was a very good bald cap placed on him. Now, I'm not saying that there was. It does look like he shaved his head. And what we would probably believe is that by the time they shot all of the rest of the episode, they saved the prison stuff for last so he could shave his head at the very end, and you didn't have to worry about pickups or reshoots or things like that. So kudos to the actor who played Pittman for going through the process of shaving his head, if he actually did that. I believe he did.
Yeah.
But we could have been fooled.
Yeah, the thing we're going to lump into production design here is going to a variety of different homes to just film different places.
A lot of outside exterior shots. It was nice.
And again, it especially when we're going to the homes of some very well-to-do people, well, you get to see what are very well-to-do homes inside of this without question.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. Being prepared to face an electrified enemy. I found a lot of solace in this because very often, especially inside of, quote, the horror genre, you're going to see some almost always ill-prepared people that are going to either become the victims or are the focus of an antagonist. And I hates me some of that.
Yeah.
If you knew that somebody electrified and if you had any basic knowledge of how electrification works or electricity works, then making sure you've got something like, rubber boots and, rubber gloves would be a great move. And not surprisingly, inside of this episode, we see it several times.
Right.
The fix of getting into a vehicle and knowing to not touch anything metal so as to help lessen the potential impact of electricity coursing through the vehicle.
Yeah.
That's all viable stuff.
It's science.
It's good stuff. It helps to take some of that real life. This makes sense against a lot of stuff that doesn't make any sense, like, a guy walking around delivering electricity.
Right.
And it helps put you in the moment where you could instantly be jerked out of the moment if it wasn't there.
Adds to the believability. It gives the characters, well, it shows that the characters actually have intelligence. Same thing with Jack creating that makshift compass. We need to find somebody that's got a huge electrical charge in them. All right, well, how are we going to do that? Boom. Cork, a piece of metal, and a cup of water. I saw that on Mr. Wizard when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I think everybody learned how to make a compass like that from television. And it does. It does lead them to their bad guy.
Yeah, and when we started talking about maybe being able to find space for other things that weren't longer stretch remembrances in black and white, maybe that's what could have been in there, too, was to just find another couple of other science references that could have been used to either find or help negate the effective power utilization of Pittman. Anyway, really great stuff, and it was great to see an educated force on the good guy's side that is going to be victimized, but the victimization is lessened because of the education involved. Loved it. There's a whole lot of great positive things inside this episode, but we're wondering what you found positive inside this episode. Let us know what you think by going to our website over at Curious Goods Podcast. Click on the right-hand side of the page, fill out that quick web form, and tell us, what did you think was positive inside this episode?
So we focused on the goods for this episode of Friday the 13th, the series. But you know what? There are always some moments that need a little bit of polishing. Let's take a look at the not-so-goods. Super artsy out there special effects. Because we can. I don't like poo-pooing on our artistic license, but sometimes weird is just weird. And I felt that a lot of the flashbacks that Pittman was having, and I understand he was sent to an asylum, he left the asylum, something did happen to his brain when he was killed twice, shot with electricity twice and died a little bit. Something happened to him. He's not all right upstairs. The elevator doesn't go all the way to the top.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. Mm-hmm. And I know that they were trying to show that in the flashbacks that Pittman was having during the episodes, but they were just a little bit too out there for me.
Yeah. The one that you and I have referenced a couple of times is, again, it's a memory remnant that is skewed from the perspective of Pittman, i.e. the victim. There's
right.
no question. When we see things inside of the Pittman view, there's this tiny little fisheye lens usage of, you know, walking through people that are pointing and laughing at him, guffawing, and you can hear the, in the background and stuff. And so I get that they're trying to convey his perspective, and very often for whether you're guilty or not when you're in prison, you are being put upon because everybody thinks you're wrong.
Well, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
That's how I get it. But the one that we're referring to is that, but then there's this piece where there's a superimposed face of Pittman on a wall.
Yeah, way in the right top-hand corner. Yeah,
and then on the wall is the shadow of him being thrust and strapped into the chair. And then superimposed over that, there is then the laughing guffaws of the district attorney and or the warden or whoever else.
Yeah.
And it does. Until you mentioned it, I don't know that I would have thought about it twice, but that you did mention it made me go back in my memory. And that scene in particular, I thought that was it's a little bit much. I love that shadow stuff, though. If it was only the shadow and him being strapped in and then his screams, I think that would be terribly effective.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. Less is more where this is concerned.
Yeah.
And I think because they had the ability to throw all this stuff in there, I don't want to put words in the director and the editor's mouth, but it feels like, hey, let's make this as wild and wacky as we can because, you know, horror show.
Yeah.
It's also, late 80s.
Yeah. It's also when the stuff like what we're seeing here was actually developed. I can remember that inside of school back then, that was the second, maybe third year of what was school announcements in our school. And we had an entire AV department
that
was dedicated to making the morning announcements. And the morning announcements was a series of people that were essentially TV people. And then there was on-camera TV people who were the ones that would sit and read the announcements.
Right.
But then there was also the entire camera team. And so those, like you'd be zoomed in on anchor number one, and then from the center, there would be a dissolve that would then be into the second anchor person reading. And so, again, just because you have the tools doesn't mean you have to use them to make super cool stuff because we can.
That's some spicy mustache glue.
Wow.
If
you knew you were going to be 3 inches from a dude's face.
That.
And the adorned mustache is not only, it's not a real mustache, duh. But not only they may as well just call it, it's not even a stash. It's like a it is not real.
Yeah.
It is not real. Then it was layered on with so much glue that it looked like if I took the sauce from an apple pie and spread it on your upper lip, and then I accidentally cut your hair quick. That's what it looked like, what we got. And I have to ding the program because traditionally inside of this program, it's usually very well done in regard to special effects, in particular the practical special effects.
The makeup effects everywhere else worked. I mean, the end of the episode when we've got deep dish Kentucky Fried Pittman, that's good makeup.
Yeah.
More electricity that goes through him, the more decrepit he gets. Mm-hmm. But what happened when the application to this mustache came along?
Yeah. It almost makes me wonder if they couldn't just have pulled off a little bit or maybe use some different lighting choices, because there had to be a way to not showcase, hey, look at my mustache glue.
Another fix could have been to make the mustache a little bit bigger, but then you run the risk of having Pittman look like either Groucho Marx or Weird Al Yankovic.
Mm. Or Gabe Kaplan. Gabe Kaplan? Welcome back, Cotter? No? Yeah?
Gabe Kaplan's fat was a little bit chunkier, though. But I guess, you know what? I can see it. I can see it.
Sure.
Oh, Mr. Wilkerson! Mr. Wilkerson! Special effects. Poof! We mostly focus on characters when we talk about the review for this show. But again, one of the most important factors is the cursed item. I mean, it's the whole reason for the show.
Yeah.
And we've run into a couple of, you know, less than wow-worthy items that have crossed our intrepid heroes' desks. This one's weird. Even more weird than a cursed wood chipper that spits out money. So this is a chair. You have to strap somebody in, touch them. You have to touch him. Remember, you touch him. Pittman touches him, throws the switch. They start getting electrocuted. And then there's this weird effect on their face that turns them negative. And then there's a flash, a poof, and just clothing.
And hazy gas, like dry ice, yeah, very,
yeah,
fog.
Yeah, that's the, that was the poof. You get smoke with your poof. But then after that, Pittman actually has to remove the clothing because, mm-hmm. you know, you don't want to sit on some dead person's clothes. And then accept the offering of the life energy, the electricity of the body that was just absorbed to be put into him so that he can then use that electricity to kill his victims. And you notice he always wears the rubber gloves until he's about to kill somebody after he's absorbed the energy. Is this just for him, though? Could anybody use this cursed chair? Because this is the same electric chair that killed, quote-unquote, killed him in prison, but didn't kill him in prison. It's weird. I think there should have been a little bit more talk about why this works this way, but B, the effect of the taking of the energy from a person seemed like they were trying to do, again, the whole less is more thing would have worked here. That effect on the face, turning the victim positive, negative, just the face, and then the poof and there's clothes. I think if you just worried about hiring an actor that can show agony and then do your quick cut poof and then they're just clothing, would have worked. Again, it was like we're trying to do more to make this effect wow-worthy, and it's actually just making it kind of, huh?
I think it might fall squarely into the whole we can
because again, we can back thing. To the because
yeah.
we can.
Yeah, because the whole negative effect, that was also something that was generated inside of, look, it's live video editing. Look what happens when we twist these knobs. Ooh, wow, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we try that? Okay, well, that looks good. Let's do that. Okay.
Product of our times then, I guess. Right, I guess this episode just falls into that category.
I also wonder, you and I are the exact same ilk when it comes to special effects, in particular wanting to use practical special effects
right.
on the front end, and then utilizing something else that would give you the ability to not have to have super kick-ass CGI or even like super high-end practical effects, again, either with cuts or shadow work or looking at the person who's delivering the pain and punishment
right.
rather than the person who's receiving it, or whatever else could be used that's just a matter of craft. Mm. There's a way to do it. It's a matter of taking the time to manage all of that, and I don't think that always gets done. I think that's what we're looking at here.
Yeah, yeah. Sadly.
Yeah, I agree.
Those are our opinions, but we're really curious about what you thought needed some polish in this episode of Friday the 13th, the series. Head on over to our website at CuriousGoodsPodcast.com. Click the contact button, fill out the web form, and let us know your thoughts.
We're running long inside this episode of the Curious Goods Podcast. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Make your podcast soar with the Editor Core. Editing podcasts can be, rough. Everyone knows that you'll spend at least double the time you use creating the podcast when editing it. Then there's the control freak factor and the gotta get it right the first time. Well, it's time to shove all that out the door and make your podcast soar with the Editor Core. The Editor Core is a talented, experienced team of podcast editors that have edited tens of thousands of hours of podcast content, and they're ready for yours now. Check out EditorCore.com because it's time to make your podcast soar. EditorCore.com. That's EditorCore.com.
Thought about a career in voiceover? Need a great, cost-effective on-hold message for your organization or business? Don't know where to start? Check out The Voice Farm, your one-stop shop for voiceover needs. Check it out now by accessing The Voice Farm at voicefarmers.com and see what difference can be made with a company that is truly outside the box. From The Voice Box, voicefarmers.com. That's voicefarmers.com.
Wouldn't it be cool if your advertising could last forever? It can, with perpetual advertising. Here's how it works. Magazine, radio, and television ads are efforts that people might see or hear once, and then they're lost forever. Perpetual advertising provides you with the chance for repeat exposure and replayability weeks, months, even years after it's originally inserted inside a podcast. So even if your advertising is included in a podcast years ago, those efforts are still impactful, providing you with true return on investment, real impact, thanks to perpetual advertising. Are you ready to change the way you and your company or organization advertises? Find out more and launch a unique perpetual advertising effort now by visiting twoguystalking.com/sponsors.
Everyone, welcome back to the Curious Goods Podcast, a retelling, a revisit, and a complete detailed educational review of each and every episode of Friday the 13th, the series, this time Season 1, Episode 17,
The Electrocutioner.
Every time we come back from break, it's time to uncover our manifest moments. A manifest moment is where Nick and I recognize either an actor portrayal, something inside the production design cone, or something else that tripped our collective review night. Fantastic. Nick, what have you got?
I got to tell you, Mike, this one was difficult to pin down a manifest moment for me. Usually I like to focus on character development, which we had none.
Right.
From our main cast.
Pretty thin.
Usually then I would pick the cursed item, but... I really don't want to do that one either, because that's just a bag of worms I don't want to deal with. So I think really for my manifest moments, it's going to have to be the ending of the episode. The joke that we get at the end of the episode made me laugh out loud. It was such a bad gag to pull at the end of an episode, especially for a show like this. Such a bad gag that it took me by surprise and actually made me laugh. You know, Mickey puts her hand on the
electrified
ball,
orb thing.
Electrified orb. Yeah, I know it's got a name for it, but I have no idea what it is.
We should ask Jack. He knew.
That's right. Jack would know. You put your hand on it and your hair stands up. Okay, well, now Roby has a massive mane of red hair, and all they did was like, all right, just hold on, girl. We're going to put all this mousse and hairspray and just make it stand hell up.
Yeah, every single piece.
And I think it's that image with her just smiling as we freeze frame for the episode. For having to sit through a slog of the... I mean, this is definitely going to color what I'm rating it later on in the episode. The slog of an episode to actually have some ray of sunshine at the end to make me guffaw out loud... That is definitely worthy of a manifest moment.
Interesting. My manifest moment inside of this episode, especially after having talked about it a little bit, has got to be the perspective of a killer / perceived killer / future killer. And you're absolutely right when you peg on the nose that there's not something right upstairs.
Right.
Elevator definitely does not go to the top. What we have to remember, though, is that it is specifically stated that he was found innocent of the original wrongdoing for which he was convicted and then killed twice, asterisk. And it's the whole chicken and the egg commentary on the, was he a killer before they killed him or not?
Did this experience make him a killer? Well, obviously, yes, this experience did make him a
killer.
Because he wanted revenge. Yeah.
Right. But what I really enjoyed, and I think we kind of accidentally fell into the tar pit of negatives, but what I liked about the black and white stuff and the pointing and the ha-haing is the concept of perspective of a potential killer / the evil guy in the episode.
Right, yeah.
Because I'm not asking for everybody to take on and understand the perspective of a villain or a criminal. But just remember that they also have perspectives, and that sharing those perspectives to us allows us not to authorize what they're doing, but to better understand what is going on and what's going on inside their functional mind. It's why you have people like criminal profilers who want to go and talk to people who have murdered people. It's
you
got
to get a better understanding.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not because they have this insatiable need to talk to people who have murdered people. It's because that by talking to them, there is then and this wavers depending on whom you talk to, but there's a general waft and a collection of information that can be used to then reference potential future things that either might happen or to help solve cases that happened a long time ago, yeah. But there's little bits of information that were missing. And so compiling a larger database of information via collective experiences and perspective is always a good thing, regardless of what it is. And so I really appreciated that they gave us that, and I think we both agreed, a little too much inside this episode.
A little too much. I think had they focused on that story bit, I think the mm-hmm. episode would have been a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And especially if they definitively did not focus on the fact that he was innocent enough.
Yeah, it was kind of a throwaway line.
Yeah, and I can't quite figure out whether that was done just to have it in there because he really was innocent. And so now you don't feel as bad when he starts knocking off people that murdered him twice. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's where you'd have to get
into it. It's loose. It's loose. Very loose.
Yeah. Anyway, that perspective concept and look at the mind of a not yet killer/killer/future killer was my manifest moment. That's where we ask you guys, what did you find was your manifest moment inside this episode? Let us know what you think by going over to our website. Again, that's curiousgoodspodcast.com. Click anywhere on the right-hand side of the page, fill out the quick web form, and tell us what you think.
Vocabulary.
Ah, the visit to vocabulary, a field trip that Mike always enjoys with the help of Nick. Our first word, thanks to our friends over at visualthesaurus.com, is...
stay of execution.
This is always a vocabulary phrase in this case that's filled and riddled with emotion. Because whether you're on the side of, yep, it's time to fry the bastard, or killing is wrong and I'm not a fan of the death penalty, blah. Whatever your stance is, it's always... haha, electrified. And that it's mentioned in the front end of this episode is the nightmare scenario, I think, for everybody. You are innocent of a crime. You have not only had your head shaved, but you've experienced a long, unjust prison stay. They've just shaved your head, and now it's time to go get fried in an electric chair. Okay, that's a big, giant bite of steaming pile. I know I don't.
Right.
And so that you're strapped in, the phone rings, and hey... it's not salvation. Okay, that sucks. And so stay of execution absolutely is something I wanted to pull from this episode as one of our vocabulary, in this case, phrases. Thanks to our friends at Visual Thesaurus, those that are curious as to what the definition of stay of execution is an order whereby a judgment is precluded from being executed for a specific period of time, or a judicial order forbidding some action until an event occurs or the order is lifted. And our second vocabulary word is
reform school.
Ooh, the reform school. Does everyone remember your parents telling you that if you don't shape up, they're going to send you off to reform school? When I bring up the word reform school inside of, again, our friends over at visualthesaurus.com's purview, the other word that comes up is reformatory training school.
Yes.
Very interesting. Anyway, reform school is a place where, without question, I know I don't want to be.
Yeah.
The definition reads, a correctional institution for the detention and discipline and training of young or first offenders. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's literally one step above being placed in juvie.
The juvenile detention. Nobody like ye. I know I don't like ye.
I don't like ye. But nobody ever caught me when I was a kid, so never spent any time inside the joint.
There was a lot of interesting dialogue inside this episode, and we're curious if you found another piece of vocabulary that we need to focus on inside this podcast. Let us know by going over to our website over at curiousgoodspodcast.com. Click on the right-hand side of the page, fill out the quick web form, and share what interesting vocabulary you found inside this episode. The rating for this episode of Friday the 13th, the series season 1, episode 17, The Electrocutioner. The scale works thusly. 10 is on top of the heap. A giant transformer. Not the robots in disguise, but one that holds electricity. A 1 is on the bottom of the heap. It's like the 9-volt battery you put up to your tongue and nothing's happening. Everything starts at a 7. As an average, the numbers go up with positives, the numbers go down with negatives. And Nick? There are no halvesies. Nick, what do you got?
This episode really didn't give me much. I go into every episode hoping for the best, despite how flimsy or laughable the episode is. I mean, just bear with me for a second. I'm going to read to you the IMDb listing of what this episode is supposed to be about, the plot synopsis. Mm-hmm. A dentist uses a cursed electric chair to seek revenge against those who wronged him. Okay, but then you watch the episode. The prospect of being electrocuted twice, dying for a short period of time, and coming back did do something to Pittman's brain. No question about that. So his grandmaster plan is to get this cursed electric chair, which is the chair that killed him, so that he can absorb the electricity from people to use the electricity to kill his enemies. The whole revenge aspect, I get. I get wanting revenge. And I get that using electricity to murder is a clean way of getting away with something. I get all that. But it seems very complicated instead of just a nice, clean revenge kick, especially when Pittman has already been shuffled away in the system. Pittman doesn't exist anymore. He has a new identity. He has a new job. He has a new life. I didn't get much out of this character. I understand that you would want revenge on the people that, you know, sentenced you to die, but guess what? The warden had nothing to do with it. The warden was just the guy in charge of the building that you had to stay at and where your hot seat was located. There's a handful of people that were on his hit list that, again, a sane person, and I know he's not sane, but there's a lot of logic jumps that I'm like, and it even goes back to all of the production design. It seems like, let's make this so complicated and out there that we disguise the fact that we have a very loose premise here. We don't have a very solid story. Even the forethought of putting rubber boots and rubber gloves on, it saves the fact that it shows that our characters aren't stupid. But even then, it doesn't save the fact that, wow, this is a convoluted episode that really doesn't live up to my expectations of what Friday the 13th, the series is. Because we've had some really great episodes, we've had some really great cursed objects, and we've had some really great villains. This gave me none of that. I have to rate this episode a 4.
Interesting. Do you remember a movie called Shocker?
I do. I own that movie. Directed by Wes Craven, yes.
And what year was that?
1989.
You know, call me crazy, but maybe this was just a hearkening to also pile on to the ability to, hey, what if an aged electric chair out of a prison were one of the...
I see that I get, or take it the dentist route and do something else with that.
Yeah, because what this did do is it totally removed itself from what happens inside the inside Shocker.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Describe Shocker in quick detail.
There's no doubt this guy is guilty. This crazy maniac goes around, kills people, finally gets caught, sent to the electric chair, but because of the script, he is now a electric entity and can travel through electricity.
Yeah.
So now not only is he dead, but he's coming after you and there's no real way of stopping him because guess what? Everything has electricity now.
Mm-hmm.
Very supernatural. Where this one, again, like I said, convoluted the whole process.
It's more grounded. Ha ha. Yeah.
Puns, you've got them.
Yeah. I want to like this because of the way that it delivers its painted final pictures.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to like when you look at this. And as long as you're willing to take your vast majority of your brain off, even with the inserts of the science parts that happen inside of this, then you're going to have a good time. But the instant you start throwing logic at it, it kind of goes kerflooey out the window. I totally agree with that. I think the piece that I had the most trouble getting past was I wanted to like and or have any endearment for the bad guy at all, and I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
I had...
We usually find something in every episode.
Even after we found that he was innocent, I had... It's all pathology. There's nothing in the beneficial side of the basket to have me connect with him somehow. And it doesn't give me anything nearly as low as a 4, but I've got to give this episode a 6. It's definitively less than an average episode of what I expect inside this program. That's where we ask you guys, what did you think of this episode? Season 1, Episode 17, The Electrocutioner. Go over to our website over at CuriousGoodsPodcast.com. Click anywhere on the right-hand side of the page. Fill out the quick web form and be shocked to death. Or just tell us your opinion, one of the two.
A better way for this episode to have gone would have been Pittman putting his victims, the people who are actually deserve to die, in the chair. I think it would have been a little bit less convoluted had he just lured them through dentistry into the chair to get his revenge. I really think that could have been a really good way to go out. The whole dentist angle. Dentists are just f***ing scary.
That's terribly well said, which is terrible, because I don't want that to have happened.
Let's just face it. This episode felt like a trip to the dentist. As a matter of fact, I've invited one over.
Wait a minute, Nick. What's going on here? Hey, why am I locked in this chair? Hey, wait a minute.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Curious Goods Podcast. We are always interested in learning what you remember about these enchanted items and their tales of reacquisition. Connect with us immediately at CuriousGoodsPodcast.com to share your treasured information. Until the next artifact reveals itself, the vault is now closed.
The warden's wife just let in a new house guest who says that he's somebody, but no one, he would never know Ryan's name. That's awesome.
Well, he didn't say he was Ryan. The warden's wife just assumed was Ryan.
Right.
And you know what happens when you assume. You make an ass out of you and me.
Oh, that's very good. You should have that in a television series or something. That'd be great.